Welcome to Audiology Mastery, where we discuss how audiology and hearing aid practice owners can increase revenue, improve patient and employee satisfaction, and live a better, more balanced life. I'm your host, Kevin St. Clergy, and today I'm joined by Gary Rosenblum, president of Oticon. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Kevin. Great to see you and great to be here.
Well, let's start with a little bit about you. I know a lot of people don't know who you are. They may know your name, but they don't know who you are, your background, and what brought you to audiology.
Yeah, so I've actually been in the industry for a while now. Not as long as you, Kev.
Thank you. I have a little bit more gray hair these days.
Yeah, well, I have.
Thanks for that.
My hair is fully brown when I started, but I started 7 years ago. And I came from Johnson & Johnson. So my background professionally is in, I call it consumer-intensive medical devices. It's hard to explain that to somebody in 30 seconds in an elevator. But ultimately, my career has been around consumer healthcare first, and then getting into devices about 15 years ago with Abbott Diabetes Care. So I was in the diabetes care space, specifically blood glucose monitors and insulin pumps. Then I moved over to J&J, Johnson & Johnson, where I was there for a number of years, also in the diabetes space. So really, really cut my teeth in my career in terms of marketing roles and sales roles and overall general management roles. My last position at J&J, I was running their hospital business on the West Coast. All their devices, all of their consumer products, all of their pharma products came over to Oticon in 2016 and have been at the helm of Oticon since then. And it's been awesome. Wild ride. I'm hooked on hearing care. Absolutely love the industry. Love the people because of the interesting backgrounds that people have. I think I've told this story to other people. Like my largest customer at J&J was about 70% of my business. At Oticon, it's only 5% or 6%. There's a huge amount of customers that are out there, all with great backgrounds and all with, you know, this entrepreneurial spirit. I know many of them you work with, Kevin. That to me is the best part of the job, is learning their stories and helping their practices grow. And, you know, not only just giving them great technology, but also helping to see their success, because their success is our success. Plus, the industry itself is high drama. I know it's hard to believe that it's hearing aids, but there's acquisitions going on all the time. There's new products that are coming out every 6 months. There's events that are happening. There's dynamics in the industry that you have to react to. So I really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun.
Anybody that knows you're pretty passionate about what you do. I mean, even when you and I have had discussions and debates, they're fun. And I can tell that you love it.
I do. Well, what's cool also, Kevin, and I know you know this, is ultimately at the end of the day, we're really changing people's lives, right? I mean, people have the opportunity to get hearing care and they couldn't talk to their grandkids before. They were having trouble enjoying their lives in restaurants, sporting events and stuff like that. If we can do one small thing to help them improve their lives and live a better life, then it's a good thing. And that allows me to sleep very well at night, knowing that we're doing that every day.
So you brought up some of the challenges. Let's start there. What do you think are some of the challenges that audiology and hearing aid practice owners have today? And what do you think some things that we need to think about for the future are?
If I was to cull it down to one key performance indicator, one really important thing that people have to look at, profitability per hour or profitability per patient. You know, and I know that sounds really technical and financially oriented, but with all the dynamics that are happening in the industry with the growth of managed care and OTC to some extent, I don't think OTC is really impacting private practice owners, so to speak. I think it's more noise. I don't think it's really hurting them. In fact, it may even be helping them because there's a lot more awareness of hearing care these days with that. But managed care specifically is a tough one because, you know, Oticon is some of our best customers are managed care customers. So I don't want people to think that we're not there. The challenge is, you know, you have this managed care is bringing a lot of new patients into the category and it's driving a lot of the growth in the industry. The issue is that a patient that a customer may have had 6 years ago was a private pay patient and they may have received, you know, $6,000 for, you know, Oticon Open during that hour. Now they're getting a fitting fee for that, which is, you know, significantly less. Again, that's just the dynamic of the industry and that is the reality. So I think that's a real challenge is maximizing that hour. So are they doing things to balance private pay and managed care in their practice? Because managed care is not going away anytime soon. but are they really focusing on getting the most out of that hour? And filling the slots with managed care is always a good thing, you know, where you have some open slots in your schedule, a great, great thing to do. There's also plenty of managed care, you know, companies offer a higher fitting fee for more premium products. So focusing more on premium if you're doing that, but also, of course, maximizing your private pay patient, let's call it profile as well, is critical. And I think there's a really important idea out there that I'm excited about, but I also warn people against. I know, Kevin, you and your business is very involved in this. It's tapping into your existing database. That's fantastic. It's wonderful that people can sell, you know, 66% of their hearing aids to existing patients. Eventually, that's going to run out though, right? So it's, what are you doing to really capture the new patients? And are you using marketing vehicles appropriately? Are you really tracking your private pay new patient versus your private pay existing patient? And how much are you getting from that? What is the average retail that you're getting from that new patient? Are you selling more premium to them, or are they starting at a low end? These are all really important things to look at given the dynamics in the industry. So one of them, of course, is managed care. The other thing is, of course, there's acquisition happening all the time. I think one of the really interesting things that I've seen in the industry is that the concierge concept, right, where you are a holistic practitioner, where you're giving an overall life solution. It's not just a hearing aid solution. It's a counseling session. It's a session that really allows that patient to know that you as a practitioner are there for them anytime they need it. Setting yourself apart in that way allows your practice to be very, very successful. The most successful practices that I've seen are those that are offering this services beyond just dispensing hearing aids. And that, I think, is a really important thing to deal with when you're dealing with big box retailers that are out there, or large retailers that are more systematized. In your case, if you offer your own sort of service, your own brand, it's a very, very valuable thing to consumers.
I agree. Let's go back to that model comment that you made. I do think people are going to need to look closely at their model, and they have to pick their place in the market is what I'm finding. I was just at a conference in the Bahamas. The model was a big discussion because some people have picked a place where they're not taking any third party and they're thriving. And there's other people that are taking third party, but they're doing more of what I like to call maybe a physician model, where they're doing the initial fit, they might check in, but then they've got other people doing the service and the follow-up. Are you seeing anything like that out there? Because I heard a lot about it last week, and I don't know if there's one way that's better than the other. The people that are just choosing to do private pay only, as nervous as I was, they're thriving and doing well in certain markets. But then there's also some people that have chosen to adopt the new model and take care of those patients in their own little way.
Yeah, there's examples across the board. I've seen exactly what you've seen, where there are customers that are in super high penetrated managed care areas of the country. Midwest is very much, I would say, like Ohio, Michigan, Illinois, Indiana, et cetera. Those states have very high levels of managed care, yet I still see people thriving with practices that are 100% focused on private pay. So it really depends on the practice. There's no one sort of silver bullet solution here. I've also seen people being extremely successful with only managed care because they've been able to figure out how to sell more premium with managed care. They are increasing the volume of patients that they're seeing on a daily basis. They're in and out in 45 minutes versus a full hour and a half or an hour and 15 minutes. So they're able to maximize that model. It really depends on the market that they're in and their approach to marketing, their status in the community, word of mouth, et cetera. So I've really seen both. And that's why it's I hate to say it, but it depends.
Well, I like what you said. I think it's going back to those KPIs you mentioned a few minutes ago. It's revenue and profitability per hour. If you're really monitoring that correctly, then you should be able to see which model is best for you and what you can do and feel good about.
Yep. That to me is the most important KPI to look at it from a practice perspective.
Switching to some of the technology a little bit, because I know that's what you do, and we'll get back to the practices in a minute. As a leader in hearing technology, what do you think is the next big innovation in audiology and hearing aids?
Oticon, I think, is a little bit more unique than other manufacturers. The buzzword for the last 6 years has been about sensors, right? What can you use? What types of devices, what types of sensors can you put in the hearing aid itself that allow for enhancements, whether those enhancements are off hearing enhancements or audiological. There's been a lot of talk and a lot of launches in the last 5 years, which feature sensors, but the sensors have not really been focused on audiology. Oticon is pretty well known for having the best sound quality and the best speech and noise performance in the industry globally. And I think that's the trend for us, is to use sensors specifically to improve audiological performance. So it's not so much about, you know, checking your pulse or figuring out how many steps you've taken or fall risk or anything like that. It's more about what can we use sensors specifically for to improve what Oticon does really well, which again is speech and noise, overall sound quality, signal to noise ratio, et cetera. That's the direction that we are going, which we believe is the right place to go. Oticon is part of DeMont's mission, is life-changing hearing health. So we have a long-term view about improving the lives of patients globally in terms of overall hearing performance. The direction that we're going from an innovation perspective very much lives into that mission. We want to get to this place where we are treating everyone on the planet with the best possible hearing technology that exists. And using sensors to improve that is a direction that we are going.
Well, that's cool. I can't wait to see some of that. One conversation that came up last week, you know, there's just so much new technology coming out, Kevin. How do you think I should stay up to speed on it? And I said, well, keep an open mind. I would still keep meeting with people and looking at the different technology that's out there. And do you have any advice for people how they can stay up on the technology? There's new technology coming out once a quarter. I'm sure that's some sort of business model. Talk to us about that. What do you recommend for private practice owners to stay up on technology and stay ahead of the curve?
Right. I mean, I could be super biased here and just say, hey, you know what? Chinkoticon.com every day. I mean, I could say that. Right. Of course not. So I think people should realize something. In the US, the manufacturers are geared towards creating innovation around the VA timeline.
Well, that's interesting. Okay.
Yes. And this is not proprietary or anything. I don't think people realize it. The VA is the single largest global contract in value in the world. So obviously global, right? So VA sells 950,000 hearing aids a year. So all of us are, of course, very focused on the VA. And hence, we launch in February and in August because our products have to be in the market for 3 months to allow us to get onto the next round of the VA contract, which starts in May. So if you walk into any manufacturer's office during the months of February and August, everyone is scrambling to get their product out the door before February 28th, because you have to prove to the VA that you have launched a product in February in order to be on the contract in May. Same thing happens in August. You want to get it out the door by August 31st so that you can get it on the VA contract in November. So it's a dynamic that is very unique to the hearing aid industry, but it's something that all manufacturers are thinking about. So when you ask the question about what do I need to do to stay up on technology, it's February and August are the months that you should be doing your searches and looking at competitive websites, reading Hearing Tracker and Hearing Journal and Hearing Review. And Healthy Hearing is a great, great site for just overall hearing aid news and knowledge. And it's a little bit of a plug. It's a DeMont company. I want to be fully transparent about that. But they have about 3.5 million visitors a year.
Yeah, we see them in local searches when we usually help them set up their profiles and stuff on that.
Right. So it's a pretty good site for understanding what's going on. You know, the issue is, where do they go first, right? So I think those are probably the first areas they should go to. Of course, they should be meeting with their reps fairly often. One of the things that Oticon does, we do local seminars, which is probably one of our most active ways or most productive ways of getting the word out about what we do. I was talking to the rep about finding out about a local seminar that they can attend. We do about 550 of these local seminars over the
years. Oh, okay. Okay.
So these are trainers who are all very well-educated, experienced audiologists will provide an overview of the product and technology. That's where you can touch the product and use the product and listen to it. That's another option. The other thing that I do, and this is just because I'm a hearing aid dork, is I have a Google search on whenever the word hearing aid or Oticon or any of the competitors hit the internet, I get an email about it. It's a Google alert and it's very well organized and I can pick and choose what I want to read. It's not just going to my email. It's a very well organized thing. Google alerts, and they've been around forever, but that's a really easy way to find out what's going on in the industry. So that's the way to find out.
We recommend they do that for their own practice name too. Set up a Google alert for your own name, your first name, last name, audiologist, and for their local practice so that they get anything that's been mentioned about them in the press, or if there's anything negative that pops up, they get to see it. So I'm sure you look for as well.
We also have a local, I should say a national event whenever we're launching something big. So if they're not able to go to the event that we're having this month on February 24th, then just talk to your rep and say, hey, I'd really like to go the next time you do a launch event. So at least they're on the radar for the next one.
You mentioned the VA and you reminded me of a story. There was, I don't know if she was before your time or not, it's an older CEO. Her name was Kathy, good friend of mine. I think she's been retired for many years. You may not have known her or not, but there was a time where people were pushing back on the pricing that the VA was getting compared to private practice. And her comment to me was, well, gosh, Kevin, you know, if you could guarantee me 900,000 hearing aids, that I'll give them to you for $300 a piece with no returns. Because right now I have to build four to sell one.
Yeah.
You want to comment on that? Or just, it was just a story that I was like, okay, great point. I was a very young audiologist. She told me this like, gosh, it was probably 20 years ago. But I always remember her saying that.
It's the age-old answer, which is volume discount, right? You're not selling your hearing aids to one individual VA clinic. You're selling it to the Veterans Administration, which, as I said, is the largest global contract. So, of course, they're going to get great pricing.
Right. And they're pretty good negotiators from what I hear.
They're good negotiators. And you're right in that they're good customers, too, in that they're very vocal and they give us a lot of feedback. We do special projects with them. Like, for example, during COVID, we launched our remote care, which is where obviously an audiologist can remotely access someone's hearing aids from their home and make some fine-tuning adjustments. That project was co-developed with VA in mind.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
We do a lot of work with them and they're wonderful to work with. And the other thing about the VA, I know we're not really talking about that today, but the audiologists, many of them have come from the independent world, right? The private practice world. So they're bringing the expertise that they learn and they're treating veterans with that. And it's a wonderful thing. So we see a lot of cross over from the independent world to the VA world. And again, it's our veterans that we're talking about here. And they're very important people. Not that our independent customers aren't important, but these are people who've usually been through a lot. And it's not just hearing loss that they're dealing with. They're dealing with, you know, 12 other things. So it's great to have that expertise that may have been honed in the independent world applied to the VA world.
Yeah, we just had a customer who sold her practice. We helped her sell it and exit. And she sold to another customer of ours. And she's working at the VA now. She's like, well, I didn't want to give it up totally, Kevin. I just wanted to still do audiology. I just was ready to exit and cash out.
Hey, U.S. government gives great benefits. So
yeah, they do.
Probably why.
Well, switching back to private practice, since that's why we're here, in your experience, what key factors contribute to building a successful audiology practice? And I know you work with some really successful practices out there. What are some strategies you think are important for growth and sustainability?
One of the biggest myths is that you should profile the customer as they're walking in the door.
Tell me more about that. What do you mean?
What I mean by that is, I've seen so many examples of practices retrain themselves to sell more premium. And somebody who walks in the door doesn't necessarily assume that they should get a level 5 technology, right? Because of what they look like or who they are, or how old they are, or if they're new, or if it's their third hearing aid. I think the most successful practices that I have interacted with are those that are super focused on standard of care technology, meaning selling them a lot of Oticon Real Ones, right? Because whenever I ask people, well, how should I start? Should I start at the middle and then work my way up? Or should I start at the top and then work my way down? My comment is you should always start at the top and try to keep them at the top. Because when we develop hearing aids, we always start with the top level technology that we want to offer. If we could offer only that, we would. But the market is unfortunately stratified into these 5 levels. Level 1 technology premium products is such an important thing and should always be offered first, regardless of who's walking in the door. because that patient should experience the best. And for Oticon accounts specifically, they do a great job of that. We sell a ton of premium level technology because our customers are not afraid to offer it to their patients.
Well, they believe in it.
They believe in it, sure.
And you mentioned fear, which came up yesterday. I need to get you that, the podcast I did with a woman named Lisa McLeod. She wrote a book called Selling with Noble Purpose. And we talked a lot about that fear. Now, she's worked with a lot of medical practices, but I loved what she said. She goes, you know, I would guess that your audiologists that you've worked with for many years, Kevin, are the same. They're scared to death that they're going to force people into a purchase that they don't want to make. And she started laughing. She goes, are we really that arrogant where we think we're going to talk somebody into something that they don't want? We just really need to believe in what we're selling and have a story of why we're asking them to purchase this particular product. And I thought it was a great point. If they can get through that or over that fear, it'd make a big difference in their ability to help more people.
Look, I've been a business guy my whole career. So it's very easy for me to say, okay, here's your price, right? But for audiologists and hearing instrument specialists, they may feel uncomfortable with that. And I get it because it's a big price tag, right? But again, how much are you paying for cable on a year basis, right? Think about your cable bill times 12. It's a lot of money that they're spending on for entertainment. How much are you going to spend on something that's going to change your life forever? So I think it's worthy and it's definitely a noble area, right? So that's number one in terms of don't be afraid to focus your practice on standard of care. The second is, I think, like it's what I said before, utilize marketing to go after those new patients as much as you can. Because relying too much on your database, which of course is important, but getting those new patients also gets you that word of mouth, maybe in new areas of the community. And this is something that I only realized over the last couple of years when you look at some of the retail chains versus the individual private practitioner who has maybe two or three offices. Being a part of your community is so critical. And you win every time when you become a pillar of that community, right? If you are the go-to person, you know, this is Kevin's Audiology in Austin, Texas, and you are the go-to person, it's critical to establish that brand, I guess, in your community, because all of hearing care is local. It really is. I mean, in terms of the most successful practices. So I think that's something that just really kind of hit me. I met somebody, and I can't remember who it was, but I was at in one of our events, you know, last year, and this audiologist had just opened up a practice in Tennessee. And he set up a booth at a pig show. And I'm from Long Island, New York. So there weren't a lot of pig shows where I grew up. But he set up a booth at a pig show or a pig contest, whatever it is. And he got something like 40 leads from being there and just being a part of the community. And the next month, I think he cleared $200,000 in hearing aids in a month.
No kidding.
So it's really about being a part of the community that I think is critical. So. But again, this is a question that I could talk about for hours.
Oh yeah. I mean, what I hear you say on that one, it's something that we've said for years. The biggest competitive advantage that people have is the quality and quantity of the personal relationships that they build in a given community. And that's exactly what he did. He supported a local event. He just happened to have a lot of people in that age group that were proud that he was there. Get yourself out there. But I also want to go back and comment on the marketing that you mentioned. People asked me last week, well, what percentage of my business should come my current patients? We always shoot for 40%. And a lot of the people at the conference were 60, 70%. And then we're like, listen, you're not marketing enough because 15% of your database is either dying off and God forbid, maybe going to a competitor because the last time you actually did a mailer to your database was June of 2021. And so you're not letting people know of new technology. And that goes back to that fear comment I had. I think some of the things that keep people from doing more database mailers, for example, and this one's for you to share with your team. We have been recommending that people go to marketing their database every other month. And there's about, 15, 20 clients we did this with last year, really good at tracking, and they had 10% growth just from that.
I'm 100% with you, Kev, because the stats don't lie. There's 40 million people in the United States with hearing loss, and there's only a 32% penetration level, which says that there's about 23 million people in the United States that could use a hearing aid that don't have it. These are new patients that we should be going after. because there's only a very small uptick or a smaller than expected uptick on those with hearing loss who are actually engaging with hearing aids.
And I think the way you get those is what you said before, and it was perfect because this is one of the things that's been at the core of our business for many years, as you know. It's how can we set somebody up as a local go-to expert? What I like to say is almost to the point where people be completely stupid to go some other place. And that's where we get into some of the things that we do. What would you say your top two or three initiatives at Oticon to help private practice owners that people need to be aware of?
Well, I mean, other than products, right?
Of course, you have the best product on the planet.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Is that here on Kevin's podcast? Go show on that one. No, so we have a lot of strategic partners that we work with. You know, Kevin's company is one of them. There are buying groups / value-added resellers that we work with. These guys are important to us because they are, I don't know how to say it, but they offer the practice office support that you may not even are aware of. So we always recommend talking to the experts. Those are the folks sort of outside of the Oticon world. Within Oticon, though, we have just a fantastic team called the Business Development Group. And this group is a group of ex-practice owners and or practice people, so to speak, who are, I would say, the industry's best at helping you grow your practice. There's really no commitment other than, you know, a potential very simple supply agreement that you can have with the business development group. But this is the group that helps you understand about increasing your retail ASP, how much you should be spending on marketing, how much you should be focusing on, you know, block scheduling and overall consultative services that allows your practice to really grow. So we believe, you know, at Oticon, whether it's an internal group like the business development group or our strategic partners, they're absolutely critical for customers to look at because you're getting, in some cases, thousands of years of experience of people who've been in the industry who've seen it be successful. There's a lot of really good stories, especially from BDG, where we've turned around a practice that was had about a $1,900 or $2,000 retail ASP, go all the way up to $5,500 or
$6,000. Oh, wow. Crazy.
So to me, that's a really important thing. The other thing that BDG offers is this KPI concept where exactly what you said before, Kevin, what's the right balance between managed care units and private pay units? And what is your true, you know, profitability per hour? BDG offers all of this as a way for a practice to really understand what are they doing right, what are they doing wrong? And I think a lot of it is just an awareness thing of all of the numbers. And BDG is a great way to sort of figure that out very, very quickly.
And y'all also get together because we have a lot of BDG customers that we work with, and they seem to really enjoy when they get together twice a year with other
the affinity group.
BDG members or the affinity groups every quarter, I think, or twice a year, something like that. But they really enjoy those meetings. And they come back, they're always like, all right, Kev, what about this? What about that?
Right. The affinity group concept is for people who are not competing with each other, obviously, to learn from each other about how to grow the practice, how to deal with the dynamics in the industry, which is facilitated by a group of experts. So it is a very, very effective way of seeing them be successful. And again, I want to be fully transparent. All these customers have agreements with Oticon. So we help them grow and it helps Oticon grow as well. So it's a very mutual sort of symbiotic experience for everybody involved. One last thing I would say is we have a brand new program called BES Plus, which is it's a loyalty program that people can sign up for, where a certain percentages of purchases goes into a kitty, a fund that they can use for marketing, for educational purposes, for equipment co-ops, that sort of thing. And it's a brand new program that just relaunched in November of last year, which people should sign up for because it's essentially free money.
Well, the nice thing that I've always heard about from customers is that Oticon take advantage of some of those BES opportunities. It doesn't matter if you're in a buying group or direct. You really support everybody no matter where they choose to buy their hearing aids and what other kind of support they're getting. Is that right?
That's right, 100%.
There's certain manufacturers that don't always do that. So kudos to you for that.
And again, it's mutually beneficial. We're taking this carve out of money and putting it in a kitty for a customer. The hope is that they're going to do a marketing event where they're going to sell more Oticon hearing aids. So it's very much, again, symbiotic.
If you're an audiologist who wants to grow your practice, we've got a free expert guide to help you achieve your goals. It's called The Only Thing. This expert guide is the only thing you need to increase appointments, sales, and profits for your audiology and hearing aid practice. The Only Thing will show you how to increase new patient calls by 5 to 57 a month, schedule more new patients each week, help more people, and increase revenue. It's the best resource I know for growing your audiology practice. Get your free copy at medpb.com/mastery. The link is also in the show notes. Back to the show. One of the challenges we didn't talk about was getting quality people in an organization. And I always joke that when somebody gets a job at Oticon, they're almost instantly tenured. You've got a lot of people at your company who've been with you for years. And I have to say, that's got to be something about your culture that you've created. I mean, even my friend who's a good industry, even though she knew me when I was like 5 years old, Kim Ringer, who's been with you for what, 40 years or 30 something years? How did you create that culture? And what would you tell private practice audiologists if they wanted to create a similar culture that people actually want to come to work for you and even stay with you for many, many years?
Yeah, well, first of all, I don't want to take credit for all the culture. I mean, my predecessors were also part of it. You know, Pierre Lauritsen, who I replaced in 2016, also created an amazing culture. Our colleagues in Denmark, like Niels Jacobsen and Søren Nielsen, have also created this overall global culture that Oticon has. The way I look at it is, as you probably know this by my personality and our interactions, Kevin, I'm not that serious of a person. I don't want to be. You spend a lot of time working. You don't want it to be a oppressive environment. You want it to be a fun environment. And that's really important to me, is that people come to work with focus and a determination, but also a happy, fun type of mentality, because again, you work so much, you want it to be enjoyable. I think we are very, very focused as a company in the US specifically on people development. You know, we have a lot of people that have swirled to different brands, to different companies, to doing overseas assignments in Denmark or other locations. In my opinion, I don't want to hold anyone back from career development, you know, so it's a very big focus for us. And that, I think, is important. But the most important thing is we have a very, very heavy audiologist-oriented culture. Okay, we have a lot of audiologists who work for Oticon. And they have I don't want to generalize here, but they have a focus on patient health and overall hearing care is healthcare. I hate to use the slogan, but it makes a lot of sense. So you have a lot of people who are in our sales team and our customer experience teams, executive teams, who are audiologists. So they're super passionate about what we do. And that culture also is very, you know, sort of pervasive. I don't know the stat, but we're probably second, third, or fourth largest employer of audiologists in the country, you know, meaning outside of like the retail world, because we want their expertise. Many of our sales reps are audiologists, probably more than 50% are. So that also brings the culture of treating patients at the forefront as part of it. I think that passion for technology and seeing patients with their life-changing technology is a big part of why people stay. Oticon itself, in the history since 1904 of coming out with this life-changing technology, definitely means it's a place that people are striving to work at who are interested in hearing care. We have, this is a great story, and I'm not going to say his name because I don't want to embarrass him, but we have somebody on our team who was working for a medical device company, and he had been wearing Oticon hearing aids for a long time, and he just was very, very focused on trying to get a job with us. He just showed up at our front door and asked for an interview. This is probably 6-7 years ago. And he somehow found his way to get an interview. Definitely not the typical process.
Right.
They loved him. And now he's one of our best people.
That's awesome.
So there's a lot of passion for Oticon based on the history of Oticon and how it's been able to help people across the board.
So how do we take that into a private practice audiologist group? Somebody's trying to build their empire. They're trying to create a culture that's fun. A continuous learning, which I heard you describe as well, which are two of our core values. We want to have fun and we want people to continually learn and we want to develop them and give them a career path, which I heard you saying. And when you have a small practice, career path isn't always an option. So What do you think they need to do to create a culture where people actually want to come to work for them? Because in that big group last week, when I asked them what their number one problem was, and I was expecting a third party and fully prepared, we got off on almost a half a day discussion on finding the right team members and creating that culture. So anything you can offer would be helpful, I think.
Yeah, so this is a tough question, but this is going to sound a little callous, but I think it's really true, is the practices that I've interacted with where people are the most engaged, like engagement level is such a critical way of measuring culture and success, is if there is shared goals. So even, you know, the PCP who's working the front desk, what is their goal? How many people do they want to reach? What is their overall, you know, net promoter score as somebody who's there? And are they getting paid associated with that? So if you are delivering on your goals and your team is actually helping you achieve your individual goals, and you see how those goals ladder up to the overall company goal, right? So your skin in the game, just like everyone else does, it really, I think, engenders a lot of loyalty and retention. Perfect example of this, I can't remember what practice it was, somewhere in the Midwest, where the PCP was a part of a monthly bonus that was distributed to the entire team, not just the audiologists, not just the techs. It was PCP as well. Sorry, am I saying that word right? Not PCP.
PCC, I think is what you're
right. PCC, the front office person, right?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. But yeah, that is such an important part of sort of engendering that loyalty where everyone's part of it. And it really helps to keep people there. I've seen that in some of the more successful practices as well. And it's a small price to pay for a massive amount of loyalty. And you know, you and I both know, and I'm sure you've talked to your colleagues and customers about this, Kevin. It's like, it's much harder to replace someone than it is to keep someone happy. So by giving them a piece of what's happening around you is a great way to keep them.
Yeah, we always say things like fire fast, hire slow. But we also have learned some new terms these last couple of years, quiet quitting. Some people quit and they don't quit. So that's the worst place you can be. But I think giving them a higher purpose is also important. We help people with their meeting agendas. We've got a meeting agenda template. And one of the things we've encouraged people to do is start talking about their biggest, one and two biggest patient success stories of the week. And that's how we start meetings off. Well, yesterday on this podcast that I did with that Selling with Noble Purpose, she goes, well, do you realize what you've done? I'm like, well, no. And she goes, well, there's actually research that shows if you start with how you're helping customers, it lights up the front of your brain and it puts people in a better mood, which means you're going to have much more engagement during that meeting. And I was like, wow, okay, I'm brilliant, perfect. But it was a really good point to make. So I think having stories of how they're making a difference is another good thing.
You just made me think of one other thing, which is DeMont, parent company of Oticon, has these four values, the DeMont values that we want to, and it sounds a little cultish. It's really not. It's just a way of putting a filter on. It's about innovation, teamwork, being a trusted partner, sort of along those veins. And we then have what's called a value check in some of our executive meetings or our leadership team meetings. And also we ask that everyone does.
Oh, I like that.
So similar value to what you talked about, where what are your values? Tell me an example where one of your peers exemplified one of the DeMont values. One of the DeMont values that I think is really important is can-do attitude, right? You're thinking beyond just your job, you're doing stuff to get stuff done. So I'll start a meeting and I'll say, okay, guys, tell me about someone on your team who exhibited can-do attitude this week or this month or whatever it is. And then we get into a conversation about it. And then they mention it to somebody else and it becomes pervasive around the organization. So that's another good thing. But establish those values first. What are the values of your practice? And then, you know, reward people for living into those values.
Well, anything else you want to talk about, Gary? We're getting to the end of our show. Any one or two pieces of advice that you want to give private practice owners to help them succeed in the future?
So last year, in 2023, the market for hearing aids grew 10%, okay, which was a shock to many of us because, oh, we thought about managed care. We thought about practices leaving or getting acquired or, you know, inflation was really a problem back in 2022, which was. And what I realized was that this industry is extremely resilient and that there's so much opportunity out there that still remains, right? So people should feel really good about being a part of the hearing aid industry. Because even if you look at the penetration of hearing aid usage as a percentage of the overall population in the United States, okay, it's growing dramatically, which means the stigma is going down, the technology is getting good, a lot more awareness. The other stat that I think is really important is that in the last market track study, we found that the average number of years between the day of diagnosis and the day of actually getting hearing aids has dropped dramatically from 7 years to 4 years.
I didn't know that. That's new for me. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I was blown away by that too, Kev.
Wow. I'd love to see that.
But yeah, I can send you the slides. So, but the reality is that there's a momentum here that we're seeing in this industry. And it's really, and I, you know, look, I'm going to say this and I'm going to sound a little biased, but Oticon has not ventured into the OTC space for a reason. And the reason why is that people need care, people need treatment, and we want to focus on what's important and where the opportunities are. And there's already 80 companies signed up to release OTC products. It just doesn't make sense given the small size of the market, right? And it's also, it's very much against what Oticon is all about, which is creating and building and working with hearing care professionals, the very much the medical model. So I think people should feel pretty good about the place that we're in. And I know there's tough things. We've been through a lot of things already as an industry, you know, with Build Back Better and, you know, OTC, managed care, et cetera. But a lot of these things are actually good for the industry. And they generate a lot of new patients coming in. And I think people should realize you just got to establish that right balance in your practice. But it's a very good industry to be in. And I think it's only going to get better.
I agree with you. And that's why we're making some pretty significant investments ourselves, millions of dollars in audiology and hearing aids for the future. But I think it also depends on where practice owners choose to focus their time and energy. And if you focus on all the bad things, and I've been doing this a while, as you know, as you pointed out in the beginning, but it just seems like even back in 1996, when I started, every 2 years, there's something massive that happens that just people freak out. They want to sell their practice right away. We're totally screwed. And the people that focused on just improving themselves and their practice, those are the ones that I see surviving and not looking to sell. Like, hey, we don't focus on our competitors. We just focus on what we can do better, getting back to some of those KPIs that we talked about in the beginning. So I think if you focus on some of the bad things, you're going to have a pretty bad day. If you start focusing on the things you can control, you're going to have a pretty great day.
Well said.
Well, Gary, I really appreciate the time, and I know the listeners do as well. It's always good to hear from some of our leaders in the industry who have great things to share. Really like the part about the culture too. You've done a wonderful job with that. Even though you inherited it, you kept it going the last 7 years, and I hear it all the time. Congrats.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.